Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back, the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Broadcasting Network. Again, you can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I am really excited to have this guest on the program. Very, very interesting guy. He's got a big show coming up on ABC, Selfie, and we'll talk about that. But there's a lot more to talk about with Matthew and all his other projects. So I'm so excited. Welcome to the program, celebrity Matthew Cardiopol. Matthew, how are you, man? And excited to talk to you today. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing good. I don't know if I'm a celebrity. I'm close to a celebrity, but
anyone,
I'm getting there.
Yeah, well,
I'm getting there.
You're getting there, especially when some of the elbows you rub next to. So that'll be the story. But the first, before I ask those questions, the research, did you always want to be an actor, Matthew?
Yeah. Yep, I've always wanted to be an actor. It all kind of started with seeing Ace Ventura in the theaters when I was a kid. You know that movie?
I love it.
With Jim Carrey?
Yes.
You're an Ace Ventura pet detective?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It all started with that. I just, I was like, I want to do what that guy does. Jim Carrey. I love Jim Carrey. I had kind of like a, right after I saw the movie, I kind of made like a Jim Carrey shrine in my bedroom. I was just like, I wanted to be Jim Carrey, and I would reenact scenes from the movie, and I've just always been a huge fan of that movie. That's kind of what started it. I tried out for plays in high school, like musicals and stuff, and I have a very good singing voice, so it never started there. I wanted to be in plays in high school, but they wouldn't, because my voice isn't very... It doesn't sound very good. My voice isn't a singing voice. I'm no singer.
But so would you say...
I'm no Celine Dion.
So you said you wanted to be Jim Carrey, especially when thinking about the whole, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. So did you want to be a comedian too? Are you a comedian as well?
Yeah, I've always been into comedy. I've always been interested in comedy. My favorite stand-up is Stephen Wright. Do you know him?
I've heard of him, yeah.
Maybe the listeners do. Yeah, he's great. Yeah, I've always loved comedies. I grew up watching comedies. My sense of humor is kind of dry. And yeah, I love comedy. Who doesn't love comedy?
Oh, comedy's the best.
It heals the pain and the wounds and all that stuff.
I was
that
watching.
Makes you feel good.
Yeah, I was watching last year's final episodes of Modern Family, and they're just so funny, that show. Oh my!
Oh man, I love that show.
That
show is so good.
And you could watch the same episode five times and catch another joke you didn't spot before.
It's true. Yep. And I love the guy that plays the dad. He's so good. What's his name? Ty? I think his name is Ty.
Ty
Burrell.
Yeah. He's unbelievable. I mean, his drive.
He is hilarious.
And just think, it's just based on how great a writer. I would love to look back to where he was before that show, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, because you got one real proven actor, and who would have thought he would have two hit shows? Married with Children, and then now again Modern Family, and then he's a Pittsburgh guy as well. I hope Ed O'Neill someday I get the opportunity to interview him. I mean, because I mean, just imagine somebody was typecast as Al Bundy. How did he make it to be able so people would forget Al Bundy with him? But it was a genius time for him to change a different role from this lazy loser to now this basic successful entrepreneur old guy that marries a young chick, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's great.
So speaking of rubbing elbows, if I Google you, Matthew, you had some, you've rubbed some elbows in some certain parts in certain movies. Tell us specifically those takes, the different parts where you were in film and TV that we can go and check out on YouTube. Tell who, what shows were they and what celebrities were you working with?
Well, my first kind of big break was in Drillbit Taylor with Owen Wilson, where he plays like a bodyguard to a bunch of kids. Came out in 2008. I play like a 7-Eleven clerk. And, that's kind of the first. I used to be Luke Wilson's personal assistant. And Luke introduced me to Owen, and Owen took a liking to me. And he got me an audition to audition for this part. And I went and booked the audition. So I think, you know, knowing him definitely helped. But that was kind of my first big break. Those guys, Owen and Luke Wilson, kind of helped start my career for sure. And they're just the nicest guys. I remember, have you ever seen Bottle Rocket?
No, I have not. You have to tweet me some of these that I should go and get my wife and I on Netflix that we watch for sure, yeah.
Yeah, Bottle Rocket is Wes Anderson's first film, and Luke and Owen are in that. And I remember seeing that when I was a kid, and remember these guys are so goofy and just oddball, and it's totally different from how most people are in comedies, and they just kind of had a really unique sense of humor that I really like, and it was amazing to, you know, I'm just a small town guy from New Hampshire, just moving here and then meeting them and then working for them was a dream come true. So
cool. We're talking to celebrity Matthew Carter Opel from Selfie, ABC's new show Selfie, that we'll talk more and more about that opportunity. So that was one of them. But you're also some other interesting people on those takes as well, different scenes. Who else were you working with on that?
I just got back from filming Jurassic World. In Hawaii. I shot that in April. And I'm not really supposed to talk about that because what happens in Jurassic World stays in Jurassic World.
No, Matthew. I'm going to bring you back a bit. Just take the little, we're getting the hook. We're bringing you right back. Not new projects. Some of the other stuff from your takes that are on the YouTube. You worked with some other big people too.
Oh, okay. Let's see who else big have I worked with.
That was on that YouTube video. I saw the Owen Wilson, but then who else? What was the other scene?
I worked with Thomas Lennon from Reno 911. He's great. Do you know him? Know his work, Reno 911?
Yes, definitely do it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great actor. I worked with him. I worked with Rainn Wilson from The Office on a small project. What other big celebrities?
I'm just thinking of that. I know. Well, think of the scene. Well, I see all these people as people too. If you check my people, if I've interviewed,
yeah,
the same thing. But no, I'm just thinking what I was watching. One was really hilarious. The whole takes were just phenomenal. You definitely have some raw talent that, you know, I could just see you getting in one of these big deals, like one of these films, and say, this guy is just hilarious. Just you on camera for
Thank
a couple
you.
Minutes,
Thanks.
You could see that. So, now, do you remember that? The thing?
Want to be my agent? You should be my agent.
I see it, man.
You're a manager.
You know, I'm good at promoting people. But so,
oh, yeah, you're great.
So, Matthew, what was the other one? So, do you remember that whole YouTube? There was one that...
Yeah.
Who else were you working with? I can't say... It's on the tip of my tongue, but it was even funnier. Just each one of them was hilarious, for sure.
Was it Scrubs?
Yes, I think it was Scrubs, yes. That was funny.
Yeah,
tell us about that.
Scrubs with Donald Faison. He's really great. I love that guy. Very funny. What impressed me about Donald, you know, Donald Faison from
Scrubs? I'm a huge fan of Scrubs.
Yeah, he just watching him work. Just I remember being on set, and he had like a whole page of a monologue, and he just, you know, he had to learn it right there, and he just spent like 5 minutes going over and over again. I mean, he's a real pro. He's great. Yeah, that's all I can think about that.
Yeah, I forget. Yeah. And I think the other one, last one, was Selfie. I don't know if it was or not of the different clips, but we'll kind of take that away from that. But everyone needs to Google you, okay? And just click
Google
on that. And click on that YouTube and laugh, because I mean, I just you remind me of the kind of humor like Napoleon Dynamite. Really, seriously. That's what.
Yeah, I get that. Definitely.
I mean, I'm glad I had the chance to even research that. Funny story, Matthew. I interview like these best-selling authors that are very, very dry, and I was talking to the publicist today. Make sure you read all the books. I just got a boatload of them. I'm like, yeah, I have all the time in the world to do it. I'm like, what are these people thinking? But at least I got to watch your video before, and it was hilarious. So tell us specifically about your big break, I guess. So you had a big break from working with Owen Wilson, other big breaks before Selfie. What else would you say? What would you list them as?
Before Selfie? Well, I mean, Dumb and Dumber 2, it hasn't come out yet. But
oh, you can't say that either. You can't say that either, Matthew. We could talk about it.
Okay, but all right.
I don't want to get you in trouble, but
I don't want to get in trouble. Jeez, okay.
I'm forgetting. Yeah, don't worry. Let's go to Selfie. Let's go to your current projects, Matthew. Involving Selfie, tell us specifically about how you got that part. What happened there? Tell us the story about that.
I get a bunch of auditions and you get rejected for stuff. And I ended up booking Selfie. I got coached for the audition to go in and read, and I went in and booked it. I love working on a show, but, I didn't know, like, you know, filming it on set that I'd have to do it with all my own selfies with, just my camera phone, you know, filming it myself.
Right.
My selfies. You know, I didn't know I'd have to do that. It's really hard to fit everyone in the shot with your phone. They're just taking a selfie. So that's a joke.
No, I know that. You're dry. Okay. Yeah, I love it. And no, I was. You almost got me hook, line, and sinker till I said nope. We're playing back and forth for sure. You're awesome. Now think about this with Selfie. Tell us the storyline. If you could tell us a bit of the storyline. You play the role of Charlie, and you are John Cho's assistant, Cho's assistant. But tell me specifically the storyline of Selfie. It's funny, I was watching TV last night, watching ABC, so we got to keep promoting ABC, right? And then basically, bam, I see the Selfie, and then a light bulb goes on, ding, 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 I'm having a celebrity from Selfie on my show tomorrow, I told my wife. She's like, oh
whoa.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So
you're living large.
Yes. You're on that long list of superstar celebrities like that I've had on my show, and so
thank you, definitely.
It's
great to meet
you're gonna absolutely. You have to go and look at the list, especially if you talk about that country music star Jody Messina on last week and the week before I had on now I'm forgetting it. The guy that sung Gangster Paradise. I'm tired today. This has been a wild week. So it'll come to me in a second. Coolio. I had Coolio on. So tell me specifically about the show Selfie now.
Sure, yeah. It's John Cho plays like a marketing guru. And he kind of and Karen Gillan plays Eliza, and she's kind of like a self-centered girl, and he kind of helps her. He's kind of like basically like a parent. He just kind of nurtures her to, you know, teaches her how to act in the real world and be courteous and nice to people and kind of, change her whole, perspective on things. So So that was kind of a long-winded answer, but that's basically what it's about. And it's a great show. I mean, it's really funny, and it's great. John Cho's great to work with. I taught him how to play chess on set because he never really played chess before. And we play in between takes, and I taught him this move where you can beat someone in three moves. And he beat me twice. So the student becomes the master because he beat me twice.
You're huge and intellectual, so we understand that. And you really taught John a lot of stuff, definitely.
I did, yeah.
Absolutely. So from that perspective, being an assistant, you seem like the kind of guy that's a coffee getter, right?
I can't talk about the plot points.
No. I'm just saying, cool. Just bringing up that thing. If everyone watches your clips, you think you're the perfect assistant to hire.
It's true. I was a personal assistant in real life to Luke Wilson for many years, and I kind of honed that. I kind of put that into my acting on the show. For sure.
And so that helped you get the part. Okay, let's talk about a short film that I definitely would be laughing about, and you have to tell me how we can go watch that. Elvis the Cat. You wrote about and directed and starred in it. And you just see, this is, again, the great thing about film festivals and things like that, to see true talent that only gets a short period of time on screen, getting to see them on for a longer period of time and say, wow. This is something, you're a funny guy. So tell us a little bit about Elvis the Cat.
Sure, yeah. That's a little short film that I filmed last year. It's about a guy that goes on a date and everything that could go wrong goes wrong. He ends up bringing a cat to the date and his best friend on the date. And it just kind of goes awry. That's what it's about. And it just played in Holly Shorts Film Festival here in Hollywood. And it was really well received. It's great making little short films, when things are kind of slow. And that was a year ago and things were kind of slow. So I made that. I just decided I wanted to make a little short film. So I really like the process of writing and directing. It's really rewarding.
So Matthew, when can we see this? Is this in the theaters, or is you also can get this on? I mean, are this a film festivals?
You can see it on YouTube. Okay. You can Google my name and Matthew Cardaropple, Cardaropple. It's Italian. You can Google my name and look up Elvis the Cat. You can cross-reference Matthew Cardaropple and Elvis the Cat, and it'll probably just pop right up. And you can watch it.
And then you also can watch the brilliance of you working with with Owen Williams, Wilson. So you can see all the different things that are out there, your IMBD and all those certain situations. So now, things that I can't talk about, and see, aren't you lucky I'm not a journalist of kinds that pick your brain, so we don't want to spoil things. Three big films coming up. So this is like an exciting year for you, isn't it? Thinking about Dumb and Dumber 2, Scouts versus Zombies, and Jurassic World, plus your short, plus Selfie. You got a lot of projects going on, my main man, for sure.
I'm very blessed. I'm very, I'm very grateful. Things are going really well, and I hope they continue to. So, everything's great. Thank you.
So, Dumb and Dumber 2.
Is there a question there?
Yeah, there's going to be a question. Absolutely. Dumb and Dumber 2. Now, it's Dumb and Dumber 2. So, this is exciting for you, especially being a fan of Jim Carrey, right? To be able to be.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So,
I met him on set. I shook his hand. And I have not washed my hand since.
So when you got to audition for this, you're like, oh my gosh! And when you heard about him have this coming out, you're like, I got to be part of this, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I figured out a way to get an audition, and I I made it happen. Yeah, it was just something that, you know, Dumb and Dumber 2, I grew up on that movie. I mean, the original Dumb and Dumber. And, yeah, I just really wanted to, I didn't want to miss out on an opportunity. So I got an audition, and I booked it, and we filmed in Atlanta. And it was a blast. It was incredible to be able to work with Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. Jeff Daniels, when we were filmed, after we filmed my scene, he came up to me and said that it was very funny. He's very humble, very kind man. I'm a huge fan of him too. I mean, I love the Squid and the Whale, the Purple Rose of Cairo. There Goes the Neighborhood. I mean, he's a really great actor, so I really admire him, and it was a dream come true to work with those guys, especially to the Farrelly brothers. They're just the most down-to-earth directors I've ever worked with. Just very, yeah, they don't have the Hollywood vibe, but like a lot of people put out there. They're just like two humble guys that like directing, and they're Red Sox fans, so I can get behind that.
Hey, so if you're a Red Sox fan, how about my Buccos? They just have destroyed Boston. Boston's the last place this year. So,
really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, six. You know that. You said that they don't have a team this year. The Pirates. That's my team, and they hopefully will sweep the Red Sox today. So, just to give you that heads up.
The Dodgers are doing well.
Yeah, Dodgers are doing well, but the Pirates might meet those Dodgers. The Pirates are on a roll. Okay, so, Matthew, all these exciting things happening. Remember, for our listeners out there, to tune in to Selfie Tuesdays this fall on ABC, and I can't wait to see you on this, and I know you can't say much about it, but I will be on the Twittersphere tweeting you saying, hey, I'm watching Selfie and watching Matthew.
Oh,
how about that? So where can our listeners find information on you and learn more about you? Where can we go?
Sure, you can go to a popular site called Google. You can Google my name. I'm also on Twitter at Matty Cardaropol. And again, my last name is spelled Cardaropole. Matty Cardaropol on Twitter. You can also find me on Facebook if you want to. And what other sites am I on? I'm on Instagram. Yeah, you can find me. I'm on a lot of social networking sites that you can check out. Trying to think what else. I think that's it, man. I can't think of any other ones.
Well, you were a lot of fun, and I enjoyed the conversation, and you caught me a couple times. I caught you a couple times, but I know for a fact, watching how funny you are, you're going to get your big, big break, and we're going to know you're going to reach your dreams and goals of being a Jim Carrey someday. I believe that. You just keep working hard, man.
Oh, man, that means a lot. Thank you very much.
But I also the type of Napoleon Dynamite. That's the kind of acting type of thing you need to be in. A project like that. When that project comes out and it becomes huge, you will be a star, my friend. So
I'm writing a movie actually that I'm going to film in April. So I'm working on a script that I'm going to film in April. That's kind of similar to Napoleon Dynamite. So
awesome.
So there you go.
All right, well, Matthew, good talking to you. Once you have some big things, news, just feel free to reach out to me. I'll have you back on the show. So thanks again for calling.
Thanks a lot, Neil. You're the bomb.
All right, take care, man.
Have a good day.
Oh, you too. Okay.
All right, see you. Bye.
You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back, the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, you can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook. LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And Pinterest, Neil Haley. And an interesting story. Anytime I interview the athletes, and especially ones I remember, usually I make the connection to LinkedIn. Well, this ended up being a Facebook request, which I'm honored to be asked to be his friend. And remembering the years he played at Illinois and that unbelievable Illinois basketball team, then playing in the NBA, especially for the great Denver Nuggets, Marcus is doing still so many amazing things. So I'm so excited to welcome to the program NBA player plus, I guess, Illinois college legend, Marcus Liberty. Marcus, how are you, man? And thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Marcus, all your life, did you want to be a basketball player? Is this something growing up you wanted to do?
No, quite frankly, no, I did not. I just, when I was growing up in Chicago, I just wanted to be a normal kid. And somehow my family didn't want that normal. They didn't want me to be a normal kid. So they kind of forced me to play the game of basketball when I was about 11 years old.
And what? How tall are you, Marcus? So that could be one of the reasons, right? How tall are you?
I'm 6'8", but when I was 10, 11, when I was about 11 years old, I was only about 5'7", 5'8".
Really? Oh.
I wasn't tall. I didn't hit my growth spurt until I got in seventh grade.
So they didn't know that you'd be that tall. I'm, by the way, 6'10", Marcus. I played college basketball at Western Maryland, which is McDaniel College, then became a professional wrestler. So that's why I didn't have a long basketball career. But height-wise, I was always tall. So that growth spurt must have helped you because you were playing like a small guard, and then, bam, the height came. So you could do things that people don't expect a big man to do, right? And that helped tremendously.
Cool. Correct. And you see it now. You see your Tracy McGrady's and Kevin Garnett's and guys dribbling the basketball at a 6'8", 6'9", 6'10". Yeah, I was doing that back in 1987 in high school. And now you see it. It's like the norm now that everybody teaches the bigs to dribble the basketball, handling it. But that's what they've been doing in Europe all along.
Right.
When they do drills and teach fundamentals, everybody does it. They don't split the guards and the bigs up. They say everybody's going to be in these drills together. And that's what have, you know, the interest in European players now, because they're so well fundamentally sound, especially the bigs, that when they come over to the U.S. and play in the NBA or college, their footwork is so good. They develop, they listen, they learn. And that's why, you know, a lot of times when you see our athletes, we have the talent, but we don't have the skills or the fundamentals like a Paul Gasol, you know, has.
Right, exactly.
You know, a lot of those big guys that's playing over in Europe.
And that's interesting. When I was a big guy, they didn't teach me the drills. I could hit the three-point shot, and they said, get underneath. So that's the way this game has changed. And what you were able to do is because you were so used to playing that, they said, well, you know, you're gonna surprise people and make such huge matchup problems. And that's what Illinois did pretty much. They were matchup nightmares for people, for sure. Because you guys with no seven-footer, you guys had pretty much the smaller lineup, but everyone could move and you were fast and quick and teams couldn't match up with you. And that's, I'm sure in high school people couldn't match up with you, they were guarding you, right?
Correct. Yeah, we had in high school we had a lot of talent, but when I went to Illinois we had talent at every position, you know. It was only select positions when I was in high school, you know. We had maybe two, three, but when I went to Illinois, we had eight guys, you know, that was very talented and was to play, you know, multiple positions, you know. Like, I was a small forward, but I could play two to three to four to five, so and the point. So we everybody on our team was interchangeable, and that what made us so special, along with the chemistry. And when you develop chemistry in anything you do, 9 times out of 10 is going to be successful.
And how honored were you to play for Illinois being a Chicago guy? That must have been awesome for you, right?
Oh, yeah, it was very nice to be at home, you know, 2-3 hours away from home. If you get homesick or what have you, you can just get in your car and just drive on back where your parents can come and visit you. And being Mr. Basketball in Illinois and seeing how everything was transforming into a great basketball, you know, city, Champaign, Illinois, that you had Mr. Basketball coming there every year. And now we don't see that as much. And I had said something on my Facebook about that a while back, that why you don't see, you know, the national ranked, you know, kids from the state of Illinois going to, you know, the University of Illinois, DePaul, you know, the state schools. they're leaving out of the States. And somebody made a good point on my page one time. They were saying, well, because once they let that one guy go who was doing the most recruiting on our bench, by the name, his name was Jimmy Collins, he had the city kids on lock. Like, if you were going to be Mr. Basketball or Illinois or All-Stater, you were going to go to Illinois or DePaul. It wasn't no other schools. But now you got the Kansas and the Kentuckys and all these other, you know, schools coming in and picking their litter, actually. They're just picking who they want and selling them or giving them a good selling point, and kids wind up coming, joining today's school, and then Illinois gets left out with the third and the fourth tier type players.
Definitely, and we're talking to Marcus Liberty, Illinois standout and also NBA star. And it's interesting, Marcus, when we talk about these things, because you think about the what happened to the Illinois. Illinois at the time was like Michigan was with Chris Webber and stuff. That team in general just was before the Fab Five in a way of the athleticism that you guys had and all these different things. You think about the players you played with, Nick Anderson, Kendall Gill, Kenny Battle, all those are ones, I know they listed others as well, but those are ones that all were the guys that ended up with the different positions and stuff like that. What made that team so special going to the Final Four? Did you know when you got together with them that this would be a special team?
Yeah, but we played a lot of teams that was ranked. And then in the Big Ten alone, you're playing against great competition every day. I mean, every game you play in the Big Ten, because Iowa was good, Michigan was good, Michigan State, Northwestern, Iowa, you name it, the teams that was in the Big Ten were all, they at least had two or three guys that was going to the NBA. So we were playing those type of teams in our own league in the Big Ten. So, and then we played a couple of games outside of that. We played Georgia Tech. I think we played them twice, and they had Dennis Scott, you know, a lot of guys that's going to go in the NBA as well. So we were playing those type of games, and it was like, you know what? We can make a mark on this NCAA tournament when the NCAA tournament comes around. You know, we just keep playing together the way we've been playing. We can make some noise, and everybody believed that. I mean, we talked amongst ourselves a lot, and we wanted to bring a championship back to this back to the state of Illinois.
And you guys were close. And I mean, to say the Final Four, not a lot of players could say they played in the Final Four because of how many teams start that tournament to get to that level. But that team, as the Flying Illini, as I now remember, always looking at the Wikipedia and then the memories, that's a throwback team that I'm sure people still talk about. Every day, I'm probably the first thing they mention is you in Illinois, not your NBA days, because just of the memories of that college team, right?
Yes, yes. And you couldn't pick a better school, actually, you know, to go to or to attend. I mean, the people, I mean, they are everywhere. I mean, I got people, I live in Florida now, and I have Illini people down here in Florida that still remembers that team. Like you said, that team right there will always be mentioned. If you say the University of Illinois, that team right there will always be mentioned because of the togetherness that we brought that town, that, hey, a bunch of kids from Chicago came together and made something special happen down here, and we would always love them. You know, I know Darren Williams and D. Brown and them came along after us and put their mark on it as well, but that first team, that 1989 team, comes to mind when you mention basketball and at the University of Illinois.
One question about Illinois. Do you feel that they're ever going to get back to where they were? What is your thought? Do you kind of pay attention to what's going on with that team?
I really do hope so. But as of right now, when you look at the way it's set up now, that anybody can come in there and basically in your back door and come in there, a superstar player like your Jabari Parkers and your Jahlil Okafors, you know, Cliff Alexander's, you know, those type of players. If you don't get those type of players, it's going to be very hard to compete for one of those good runs, you know, like we did and like we had. Not to say that I don't think it can happen, but it's going to be very hard. Those guys going to happen, because we were very talented when I was there. We had Mr. I think it was three Mr. Basketball of Illinois on that basketball team that I played on. I was one of them. Nick Andrews was one of them. Lowell Hamilton was one of them. So that's three Mr. Basketballs of the state of Illinois. You got to get those type of players if you want to win.
And where are they going? They're going to Kansas,
they're going to,
UCLA?
They're going to Kansas, yep. They're going to Kansas and Kentucky. Like Anthony Davis went to Kentucky. Okafor just went to Duke. Jabari Parker went to Duke.
Yes.
So did you just, you know, and a lot of times now it's all about what you have, too. I mean, when you go visit these kids, these campuses now, kids want to see all the flat-screen TVs in their locker room and how nice the locker rooms are and all that, and because they feel that, this is something I want. I want to have this, you know. Not knowing that you go to a school to play basketball and get your education, but a lot of times kids don't see that, you know, and they want to go elsewhere. And a lot of times now that, you know, what's going on in Chicago with all the little killing and, you know, these kids are dying,
right.
Murderers and shooting and gang banging and all that. So now these recruiters from the outside that comes in, that's a selling point for them because they can say, well, do you want to stay around this? You know, come to Kansas or come to Kentucky, you get away from this.
Exactly. And that's the big part of it is that, you know, and we don't always talk about this, the what's happened in Chicago, and that's got to hurt you as well, hearing how dangerous it's getting in Chicago, right?
It's very dangerous. I mean, you know, I have a nephew that plays basketball and lives there. I tell him every day, you know, watch your surroundings. Don't expect because you play basketball that you're untouchable or, you know, you watch who you hang around. You know, you have to educate this young generation because it's not like it used to be when I was growing up that, yeah, everybody's cool. And no, you have gangs, you have guys carrying guns into high school, and you just don't know. So I told him, always be careful of your surroundings.
Definitely. Be careful of those surroundings for sure. So then NBA, your second round pick, you get drafted by the Denver Nuggets. Did you expect to go earlier than in the draft, in your opinion?
Oh, yeah. I tell the story all the time. I never told it publicly, but amongst my friends, and they all knew about the Milwaukee Bucks was going to take me in the first round, 15. They had the 15th pick that year. And they called me that day of the draft and said, we've taken you 15. I went to work out with them, so I'm thinking, yeah, I'm good, you know, because I did work out for them. I had a good workout with them, and I was thinking I was going to Milwaukee. And when they didn't call me, I didn't think I was getting drafted. So I had fell asleep, and my mom woke me up and told me the Denver Nuggets had drafted me, and I didn't work out for Denver. So it was just one of those. You know, they were taking the best available player, and they wind up drafting me. And one of the owners, Peter Bino at the time, he was a Chicago guy, and he's like, we couldn't let you slip by.
And then you go to the Nuggets, and you have a decent career there. Do you think being a second-round pick, if you were bigger money in the first round, you would have had a longer NBA career?
No. I think, and this is just my personal opinion, I think if I'd had some veterans that was, you know, more of togetherness and winning, that I would have probably been around a little bit longer. And then, of course, you got to throw in, I had three different coaches in three different years.
Exactly.
And so it's kind of hard to adapt to somebody's system when you adapt to it. And then another coach comes in, and then you got to start all over. You got to impress. You got to show that you want to be here. You want to work. You want to start. You want to do this. And they probably have their own agendas already in their mind, what they're trying to do. So it's kind of hard to stick, sort of stake to be in the NBA as long as I, you know, as long as you see the guys playing now 8 to 10 years. I played 4 years. It was a blessing. I'm very excited about, you know, my accomplishments and what I did. And I just move on. Now what I'd like to do is give back to today's generation of youth to tell them, you know, my experiences, my life experiences. I go out and speak and do a whole lot of things, man. And I love this more than anything.
And that's tremendous because you saw the platform and that it gave you that life's purpose. Because again, it's a short career, but you didn't continue to. You still played in the professionally. You had a lot longer professional career. You just it was no longer in the NBA. And I had a story with Dennis Hobson about that. And Dennis basically told me he said, you know, that. It just ended up, it was what it was. It was, you know, you have certain contracts and he stayed in Europe and never came back again. And he had the ability to go. So do you have almost the kind of same story when you left the NBA to go somewhere else?
I went over to Europe and played another 6 years. Yeah. I played another 6 years and that was the best experience that I have ever had because of I had two daughters. I have two daughters, and they had an opportunity to experience Europe, Japan, Turkey, France, Greece. My children had a chance to experience that and go to school and learn the languages and all that. So that within itself was awesome to me. It wasn't just about me playing basketball, but my kids getting a chance to explore the world.
So that's interesting. So once you go there, did you first want to leave the NBA or is it like it just an opportunity came and you said, I'm going to jump on this. And then it was very hard to head back to the NBA.
Yeah, it was kind of because you know, I tell people all the time, you got to think about the political part of, you know, the NBA too, or sports in general. If you start to leave and go play over in Europe, some 9 times out of 10, they think that, well, he doesn't want to play no more. He just want to go over there and make money and do whatever. But no, my dream was not to play in the NBA. I didn't realize it didn't come to reality until I got to college that I was going to make it to the NBA or possibly put my name into the draft to get drafted into the NBA. So it was never a dream of mine. So I just loved to play the game when I was a little kid, and I still do to this day. I still love it. There's a lot of times kids don't understand the business side of basketball, especially when you're trying to go professionally. So it's kind of hard, you know, to say that I wasn't supposed to be there a very long time or whatever. It worked out the way it's supposed to work out for me because, okay, I'm still here and I'm telling and sharing my story now.
Exactly. And you took your career in basketball and it led to life after basketball. So what did you do right after you retired from basketball? Was it a hard transition for you?
Well, of course, it always going to be a hard transition for anybody that's got accustomed to doing certain things a certain way. For instance, like if you play basketball or if you was a doctor for 15 to 20 years and now you want to jump in and be a sports reporter or whatnot, it's kind of hard because you're so accustomed to doing certain things.
Exactly.
It takes time. But me, I always knew that I was going to do something around kids. I love being around kids. I think sometimes when you plant seeds into these young kids' minds and let them understand where they're trying to go because you've already been down that road, I think it helps. And a lot of times parents say the exact same thing, but coming from somebody that's played professionally, it tends to stick a little bit more because of where you've been.
Yeah, and working with kids, so coaching definitely was something for you. I know you're coaching now, but did you work and do some charity work with kids as well in that process once you were done playing?
Oh, yeah. I did some things when I was in Denver. I did a lot of volunteer work. I speak at, you know, high schools, churches. It depends on what organization that wants to have a professional athlete come in and share their stories to some kids, the next generation of youth. Not just the athletic department. It's the whole school. I like to communicate with the whole school, trying to get them on the right page.
And right now you're in Florida and you're coaching. So how many years did you coach after playing basketball? How many years have you been coaching?
I've been coaching. You could say after I left, I jumped right into coaching. I was living in Las Vegas. I was assistant coach at a high school there. But through my basketball programs, I've always been coaching. So I've been doing this for 15 years now. Strong.
Are you ever looking to coach at a higher level than high school?
Yes, yes. That's always going to be someone's goal to move up. But right now, I'm pretty sure that, you know, if I can touch some of these kids, you know, at this level right now, the high school level, that chance will come. That opportunity will come for me.
I believe it will too. And again, it must be great giving back, coaching high school kids for sure, and being that role model to them and that mentor that a lot of them need for sure.
Right.
Do you agree, Marcus? Is that a great experience for you, working and mentoring with these kids that you coach?
Oh, I think that's the best experience that anyone could have, because you are actually touching someone's lives before they get to be an adult. And that's what's wrong with a lot of kids nowadays. We don't have enough former athletes or teachers to come back and share your experience and drop it to these kids and give it to these kids the way they need to hear it, because they're going to have some bumps in the road. So if you can touch them right before they get there, I'm talking about 12, 13 year olds, you know, before they get to that road, they already see it coming and they know how to react and know how to respond to it.
It's so true. Unbelievable, Marcus. Great talking to you. Do you have any projects or things you're promoting right now? Your talks? I know you have a website for people to go to see if you'd like to go out and speak. But any other projects going on with you, Marcus?
Not at the moment right now. But, yeah, I always have things on my website. You can go to marcusliberty.com and you'll find, you know, things that I do or camps I might, you know, have in their city or town. So.
Well, you definitely had me reminisce about Illinois basketball. I'm not going to say I was I'm a Big East guy, but I watched that team and I was just amazed by them. And to connect with you on Facebook and then get to hear your story and hear, you know, a lot of people say, oh, your NBA career ended early. But now I learned, hey, there are definite greener pastures sometimes in professional basketball, not just in the NBA, to make a decent living and then go on and do what you love, which is coach. And that's fantastic.
That's right.
Mark. And you're living that dream and you're very blessed. And thanks again for coming on the show, man.
Oh, man, I appreciate it, Neil. Anytime, man. I'm here, man. So if you need me to come on and talk some college basketball this year or what have you, I'm around.
Marcus, I'm going to grab you on that for sure. Especially we're going to break down college basketball season. I have a football analyst, but I need a basketball guy, and you really know those X and O's. So I'll definitely reach out to you. Thanks again for calling, Marcus.
Okay.
All right, take care, man.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Bye bye.
You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor. Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. And Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I love working with the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust. And when we, especially one of our flagship stations in Pittsburgh, we are really excited to promote events. And one that is an unbelievable one. This has received 9 Tony Awards. Also a Grammy Award. The Book of Mormon. And backed by popular demand, the Book of Mormon is going to be at Hines Hall September 23rd through October 5th, and I'll try to give you a bunch of the times later, but we have somebody who is a graduate of Carnegie Mellon that now is part of the cast and wanted to come on the show to talk to us. So I want to welcome the program from the Book of Mormon cast, actress Danae Benton. Danae, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm excited, and I'm excited to talk with you, especially to hear of somebody from Carnegie Mellon, because that's where I got my radio start. I never went to Carnegie Mellon, but that was the first radio station that gave me the opportunity, and now with 150-plus stations later, I owe so much to Carnegie Mellon as well, from just getting an opportunity to talk to them. So, Danae, tell us a little...
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Good old WRCT, always going to thank them for my radio start. Now, Danae, can you tell us a little about your background and some of the other parts you've played in? And then we'll get right into talking about the Book of Mormon.
Well, I grew up doing theater in Central Florida and in school and taking voice lessons and singing in church and things, but never really professionally. And my first professional gig was actually in Pittsburgh at the Benedum at the Pittsburgh CLO. I did summer stock there. this summer after my sophomore year of college. And then, but the Book of Mormon is my first sort of real big step into the professional industry. So it was a huge blessing and exciting step because I was not expecting it at all. So other than that, I did a lot of roles in college at school, but this has been sort of my first big step.
You know, it's really interesting, Danae, and we worked, and I used to teach at St. Agnes School in Oakland, which now is St. Benedict the Mormon. We worked with Carnegie Mellon students in the theater, working with the kids. They did it for a number of years with my fifth graders and stuff, and so you guys are fantastic.
Wow.
Over at Carnegie Mellon. I don't know when you graduated from CMU or if you were in the graduate program or the undergrad, but we would work with the CMU. I never got the opportunity. My co-teacher did, but I had to give a shout out to that. They do tremendous stuff working with the Extra Mile Foundations in those Catholic schools. I don't know if you ever got an opportunity to go over there.
No, I didn't. I just graduated in May of this year, actually. So that might have been
maybe they ended that before your time. But such great things, Carnegie Mellon. A lot of great things to say about it. So good plug to them. Now, your big break's the Book of Mormon. So so tell us specifically how this opportunity came about.
Well, the Book of Mormon actually auditioned in sort of college cities with acting conservatories and musical theater conservatories, and a lot of alumni from the School of Drama at Carnegie Mellon were in the original company of the Book of Mormon on Broadway and are in other companies. And so I think they came around to just audition people to be on file for the future. So actually a bunch of me and my classmates went in and just sort of put ourselves on tape for the audition. And I ended up getting a couple callbacks, and I got an email saying that they really liked me, but they didn't have a spot. So I kind of put it out of my brain. And then in August, right before senior year was supposed to start, I got a phone call saying that they had a spot open for December. And I kind of like screamed and cried and called my mom and figured out how I was going to make that work. So it was very exciting.
So it's a process where you thought, oh, I'm not going to get the call back. And then you do get the call back. And then, wow. So what part are you going to be playing in the Book of Mormon? Because some of our audience might have not seen this unbelievable theater performance. Tell us specifically what part you're going to play.
I am playing the character of Nabalungi. She is one of the girls in the village who, when the Mormon boys come, she kind of really gets excited about them being there and kind of believes everything they're saying. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is going to be like my ticket out of here. Everyone needs to listen to these people. You know, it's kind of that juxtaposition of the rest of the village being like, oh my gosh, here they are again. And I'm sort of this wide-eyed girl who thinks that the general's coming back, the sort of warlord in our village, to do all this damage, and the boys have come just in the nick of time. And so I'm trying to help them save our village as quickly as possible.
It's quite interesting, especially growing up. Did you watch South Park at all? Especially,
my brothers did. We weren't necessarily allowed to.
My kids won't in that way, but I grew up watching it, and fantastic for sure, and funny, and they're just so talented in how they wrote this for sure. Don't you agree?
They are, and it's really smart humor too, and you can't help but laugh at it, even if you're not supposed to.
and unbelievable how popular it is. So you've been traveling around doing this performance. Where have you so far traveled to do the Book of Mormon? Have you been?
We have been pretty much all over the West Coast, between L.A. and Las Vegas and Portland and Seattle, and kind of a bunch of cities in California, San Francisco, and we just left the West Coast, and now we are in Minneapolis for a month, and Appleton, Wisconsin, and then we'll be to you guys in Pittsburgh.
Wow, so you're definitely, and so for so many days, and is that different for you to think about the amount of performances that you're doing? It's just definitely like Broadway in a way that you're having so many shows a week, and just think about the amount of your first preparation for this, but then going out and saying, okay, I got 8 shows in like 5-6 days, and probably not used to this before this, so this is definitely have to kind of, pace yourself and stuff with that amount of performing, right?
Yeah, it definitely took some stamina building coming out of school, which had a different kind of stamina attached to it. But it definitely takes certain muscles to work to be able to do 8 shows a week at your best and give everyone a good show. So, but it's definitely training that I don't regret, because it's made me much better and much stronger of a performer.
And that first part is of doing it when you first did like one of the cities and you were there for that long, was it draining at first for you? And then did you get a lot of advice from other cast members that have done this before?
You know, it was really exciting. And then I remember my first 2-show day, where we have 2 shows on Saturday and Sunday. In between, I tried to get lunch with a friend, and I practically fell asleep at a table because I was so exhausted. But it was also because I was just still, there's so much excited energy and adrenaline attached to it. And definitely watching some of the pros in my cast who have been in the business for such a long time has only made me better. And I'm like, oh, okay, so I've been watching them do this here, and I sort of got to steal some tricks from my book.
We're talking to Danae Benton, cast member from the Book of Mormon, and they'll be coming to Pittsburgh very, very soon, September 23rd through October 5th, and I'll give you the times and dates and where to go, especially if you're in the Pittsburgh area. But also, you can check out Book of Mormon, and we'll find out that website so that people can find out what cities they're going to be traveling to, especially with our international syndication. Now, let's kind of delve into specifically the story a little bit for our listeners out there that, you know, they maybe have seen South Park before and they've heard about this and they've wished that they could come to this. Give us a little sneak peek of the storyline for our listeners.
Well, basically, you open the show with these two this Mormon huge gaggle of 19-year-old Mormon boys who are about to be assigned on their mission that they're going to go on with their mission partner for 2 years. And so they're all excited, and it's this great big number. And you've got Elder Price, who's kind of the golden boy, and his dream is to actually go to Orlando. And he ends up getting matched with sort of the syrup of the group, Elder Cunningham, which is all sort of shoots the wind out of his sails initially, and then he finds out that he's not going to Orlando, but a sort of war-torn village in northern Uganda. And so we get to see him kind of deal with all these shocks that he's just not prepared for. And then he gets to the village still trying to be his shiny self, and we sort of see him come down to reality in a bit, but in a beautiful way. And then Elder Cunningham, who we expected to kind of mess everything up, gets to kind of rise to the occasion and get his own huge arc as well. And so it's just this fun story of watching people get faced with things they were not expecting, which kind of never gets old.
Definitely, in so many ways, in the comical parts of the humor that we've seen and of the brilliance of South Park in ways. Now, tell me how cool it is to connect with the fans, especially being there so many different performances in different cities and getting to connect with the fans afterwards. It just must really make you so happy to be part of this performance and to be part of such an unbelievable performance, to be involved in this musical for sure.
They really make it everything. You know, sometimes on Saturday night, it feels like a rock concert because there's just so much energy, and it's amazing how much like art and theater unify an entire country, because in almost every city, the response has been the same, and just the excitement that we're coming and people that will come night after night and do the show like 9 times that we're there.
Really?
And are
wow.
just excited and bring friends. And that's what makes it easy to do it every night, because you remember there are so many people in the audience that are just so happy for you to be there. It gives you that extra boost.
What would you say is your favorite song, especially when we talk about Grammy as well, for the CD? Tell me specifically enough your favorite song in the musical.
I'm torn between Turn It Off and Baptize Me. Baptize Me is one of the songs that I get to sing with Elder Cunningham, and it is just so clever and hilarious and sweet and full of double entendres, and it's just so great. And then Turn It Off is the song that the Mormon boys that are actually stationed in Uganda sing for the first time. It's about how they cope with all of the sort of terrible things that can happen in life, and it's just so hilarious. And I watch it. I'm not in that number, but I watch it almost every night and just laugh every time because it just never gets old.
Who would you say has taken you under your wing and talked to you, especially when I talk to lots of actors and actresses across the country, from theater to movies to television, that, you know, that has done a lot of performances and stuff to teach you specifically the ropes, especially with the drain, with the constant have to be on with 9 performances and sometimes 7 days?
You know, honestly, this is a very big cast. There's not a lot of women in it, and so the girls in the cast, especially some of the women that are older than me, have been so wonderful and warm, and were so welcoming to me when I first got here. And I've really gotten, and a lot of them have been doing shows and tours for almost as long as I've been alive. And so it's really nice to have these pros to watch and see them show up to rehearsal and show up to the show every night and with their